Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. While the salmon season has officially begun, we're still in the thick of it, so to speak, with the long nights still hanging over us, and many of you are getting busy at the Vice in anticipation of your own local waters opening in the coming weeks. So for this week's episode, we catch up with former international angler and renowned fly tyer Ryan Houston, find out about his fly fishing career, his fly tying obsession, and also to get some fly tying secrets from one of the best on the island. And Tom, before we hear from Ryan, I thought it was interesting to hear just how much Ryan's fly tying has also enabled him to become a better angler.
Yeah, Dara, wasn't it? It was really good to listen to him and to say, like, you know, he talks of initially how he started fishing and then how he went to fly tying, you know, how he got into it at such a level to improve his fishing. And it did, you know, when he talks of, you know, having patterns that nobody else had. Particularly at a time, and I can really relate to it because we're about the same vintage, and what was available then wasn't great compared to what you can get now for shop bought flies. But how he used his fly tying ability to further his angling career, it's great.
I thought it was interesting as well because I asked him about you know, sharing them with the club members. No. That's how you win the competitions.
We've a classic one here. When you're asked about something, it's, there's something I tied up myself. Sure, it didn't really matter. They'd have taken anything. Once you hear that, you know. The only thing is, at least you're not being lied to.
Yeah, you're being politely told to F off.
In the nicest like possible way.
It's like asking somebody where for a mark, like, you know, GPS coordinates.
Yeah, no, it is. And look, I mean, there's that element. I mean, in competition fishing, as you know, I do a fair bit of it myself. And if you have something working coming up to an event, if it's going to give you sort of an advantage, well, naturally, you're going to sort of say, well, that's my advantage. I worked on that, particularly if it's something you've tied yourself. So, you know, I'll use it. But then further down the line, nothing remains a secret for too long in fishing. True. You know, and that's true as well. So things do get out. And, you know, as we've said it before here, a lot of what non-competitive anglers use as methods, and particularly as flies now, you know, were born out of the competition scene.
Exactly, about trying to get that edge, trying to get that advantage. And it was interesting that when, you know, as you'll hear when Ryan explains, you know, his fly fishing career when he was younger and then the fly tying obsession that he kind of got into, how it really did push on his fly fishing career in terms of winning competitions. And now he's kind of at the stage, like he says, with the kids, family, it's now more fly tying, less fly fishing. Yeah. And it's actually for him about the challenge of the fly tying now.
It was very interesting when he said, like, when he pick up the magazines, you know, he would look at flies to tie them. And as I say to when we're talking to him, I still look at flies as something, oh, I could catch fish with this. But he's actually made that jump and he just wants to tie that fly, which just shows you the level which he has got to in his fly tying, you know?
Can I ask you then, right? And I think I asked it, Ryan, is so, because I don't tie flies, but it was interesting when he was talking about the edge it gave him. And as you were saying there, does being a fly tyer make you a better fly angler? I'm not saying, obviously, we're not saying the best fly tyres are the best fly anglers, but what I'm saying is being halfway decent at tying your own flies, does that make you a better angler?
Right. And I think I say it, and the best way of putting it, it doesn't necessarily make you a better angler, but it definitely helps you. It definitely helps you. You know, there are some guys that, and I know a couple of lads on the competition scene that don't tie their own flies, and they are fantastic anglers, you know? And they'll do anything in their power to get all patterns and everything, and they have to work at it like that. And on the other side, I know some really good fly tyers who, how would I put this? Yeah, I mean, they're decent anglers. But for some of them, you know, it's not really the fly tying can go to a level where it's not actually the angling at this stage. It's just to fish their own flies that are really well tied. But like for me, I would say that definitely being a half decent fly tyer, no doubt helped me in my fishing.
Yeah. And in fairness, when we were speaking to Ryan, and he had some very good tips as well in terms of, you know, if you're looking to start out or looking to improve your fly tying, you know, just in terms of kind of how to approach it and, you know, the importance of maybe just tying a fly that you're going to use, you know, that you want to use out in the water. And then when you start catching with it, then, you know, the bug gets under you and you start wanting to do more. So I think there's a lot for people to get out of this. It's an interesting interview, you know, between the fly fishing and the fly tying side of things. And, yeah, I don't know if many people will get as obsessed as Ryan.
I'll ask you now, Dara. Tell me, like, after chatting to him, and you say you don't tie flies. I know you have had a go at it a while back. After chatting to him, and he gives a couple of nice tips and everything, any chance it's going to go into the small bucket list?
It's getting to the stage now where I have to literally start just saying no to things, you know, that kind of way. I got, you know, a jack of all trades, master of none kind of thing. When I first started fly fishing, when I really got into it and, you know, was like blown away by all the different aspects of the sport, I think that was the time probably maybe when, if it was going to get under my skin and if it was going to hook me in, I would do it. I kind of look at it and go, God, do I want to sit down there learning a new skill and having to put, oh God, this sounds terrible, I'm not exactly selling it, but putting the time into it. There is something appealing to it, I think, on a winter nights or long nights where, you know, what are you doing in the evening? You want to be sitting there, do you know what? Take out the vice and start tying some flies. I kind of just doing other stuff. So that's just the reality. So I kind of, yeah, whether it's training, reading, writing, whatever, like, and I kind of made that conscious decision. It's like, actually, it's funny. It's like when when I moved to Tipperary 15 years ago, and the shore is nearby me and the golf course is nearby me. And I did fish when I was younger and I did a bit of golf when I was younger.
Right.
And I knew.
Yeah, no.
my Pringle jumper collection is hidden in the wardrobe. But I did make the conscious, I did at the time think, oh, right, I could do one or the other, I can't do both. I knew it, because I knew if I was going to play golf, that was it, you'd be doing it.
Yeah.
And I knew if I was going to be doing fishing, that would be it. I wouldn't have room for both. And that's why I just made a conscious decision, no. And I still drive by the golf course every day, like, you know, heading into Care. Like, so it's, and yeah, half of me hankers going, God, I'd love to be out, you know, hitting a few balls down there and it looks brilliant. And then you kind of go, do you know what? There's only so many things you can do in this lifetime. So, you know, just focus on it. So yeah, I don't know. I think the fly tying boat has left me for this stage is my long winded way of saying, don't think so.
No.
I could have just said no.
Yeah, would have been like,
well, I'll tell you what, let's hear from Ryan Houston now and an actual fly tyer. And I first asked him about how he got into fly tying in the first place.
I started fairly young. I was probably in primary six whenever I started, and just started fly fishing. My dad took me 1 week on the River Laggan at Marlin. And the next week, my uncle came around and gave me one lesson in fly tying. Basically, how you put a hook in a vise, how you attach the thread, how you basically tie in materials. And then that was it. From then, it was just something. I think with fly tying, you either get it or you don't. And it sort of clicked with me. And I sort of spent all my time up. My dad actually converted the roof space, so I'd be going up there and basically spending every minute that I got sort of working out how to how to tie flies myself. I had an old John Vineyard book, which I sort of mulled over as well, and it actually fell to pieces. The whole backing and all come off it, but just I would sort of get myself into that, and from there I taught myself, I suppose, essentially.
Was it initially trout flies? Were you fishing for trout?
Yeah, it was all trout, brown trout on the River Laggan.
Right.
So were you, as a kid and teenager growing up, that was your thing? You'd love to, obviously you'd love to be fishing, but when you couldn't be fishing, you'd just disappear up there and just be...
Well, winter time was for tying flies, you know, for the rest of the season. But during the season then, it was tying flies because you were going fishing the next day or because you were going fishing that weekend. So it was kind of, I suppose, initially out of necessity. And it was, I suppose, when I started, like, it was the 80s. So we were probably still basic dry flies and down and across wet flies. But I think what drove me was, we had, in the club that I was in, we had quite an active competition scene. And as I come up through the junior ranks from that there, I would be going out fishing and then trying to go back to the vice and work out what would have, you know, worked better for me. And I think what happened was water quality around about then, I think, started to go downhill, and the fish maybe weren't so much up, because a lot of it, our fishing then was predominantly dry fly. And then I worked out how to nymph and nymph under indicators and stuff like that. So whenever I was, that would have probably been whenever I was maybe from 15, 16, 17. And then whenever I joined the senior ranks, then that propelled me to win in the competitions, because I was catching the bigger fish that had sort of gone down to the bottom to feed off the hog louse and stuff like that. And I was tying weighted nymphs and things, which weren't so common among the rest of us fishing at the time.
That's the advantage of, actually, and I've always said it, being able to tie your own flies.
Yeah.
Because particularly at that time, a lot of those patterns weren't readily available, were they, Ryan?
No. No, like everything was winged wets. Like, you'd went in, you'd bought iron blue wet flies and stuff like that there. But as I said, you could go out, you could try something. If it didn't work, you found a new material. You know, like the range of materials that there is now is exponential compared to what we were dealing with. Like, I remember, you know, getting my first tippet collar, etc., and thinking it was the best thing on earth, you know, and those old fly shops going in and smelling the naphthalene, and you were coming away. But the range of stuff was minute compared to what it is now. But if you found something new, or you shot something, or somebody gave you something, you could always incorporate it and try and get a little bit of movement. Or, like, a lot of commercial flies are better now than what they were then, but, like, a lot of them then were brutal, and they were so heavily dressed, you know, that they were next to useless. There just were more fish about, probably, but being able to put less turns on something, a bit more movement in it, add little hot spots or a bit of ribbon or a little bit of weight or something, I think that helped with my success in the competition, fishing the local competitions that we were fishing then. So that was, that drove my tie-in, I think. And then whenever I first came of age, I suppose, and came into the senior ranks, then I won our annual league that year, and that allowed me then to qualify to fish the Ulster qualifiers, etc. And I went on in that next year to qualify for Ulster, and I won the National Rivers Championship, and that got me to fish the home internationals for Ireland. So that I think was on the back of my fly tying.
I was just going to say that wouldn't have happened. Well, it would have been a lot harder for you to have done it if you weren't tying your own flies.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So then when we went to the competition, you know, like I brought my stuff with me, and people would, you know, the guys would come in after the day's practice and say, can you copy this or so on? And because I could. So
did you find that as well, like, even from a younger age, Ryan, fellas in the club were asking for you to tie flies for them?
No.
Okay.
No, I suppose I didn't really offer it, I suppose, because, like, you know, you were trying to keep it secret. This is working. I'm not going to give it to everybody.
Hence, you know, why you won the championships.
Yeah. So down the line, you know, it would filter through a little bit. But no, I think people were quite, how would you say it? They weren't overly open. You know, like, if they were catching on something, they would lie to you. You know, what are you catching it on? And they'd say, a wee beauty. Would be the answer to it. Like, so you kind of learn yourself then to not give too much away. So I guess
enjoys the competition scene.
Yeah, well, I've seen guys have arguments over, you know, the number of turns of rib that there need to be on things, and it's ridiculous, you know.
I'd say the one thing, like, as I said, not being a fly tire, but Tom, speaking to you and Ryan, even hearing you there speak, is you become a better fly angler, don't you, when you're tying, because it's forcing you to think about how to solve problems and how to, you know, catch those fish that you were missing before. You know, so you're much more, it makes you think a lot more, I think.
Yeah, well, you have to probably to think much more about what those fish are eating and how that's behaving and how what you're tying relates to that. Mm-hmm. You know, as I said, some commercial flies tend to be very bulky and therefore less life, and maybe they don't sink at the same rate or move the same way. Maybe they're too big. So you can, whenever you're tying yourself, you can tie whatever size you want. You can tie it short. You can tie it heavy. You can add weight, you can make it float, you can do whatever you want with it. So it just, it's more versatile, I think.
Yeah, you'd be the same, Tom, wouldn't you? Like from your own perspective with the lakes fishing? Like,
oh, completely, completely. Although I have to say, and you probably agree with me there, right? Like, because we're more or less the same vintage. If we compare the commercial flies that were available in the 80s to what's available now, they've improved vastly. They really have. I mean, there's nothing compared. Like, I remember you used to get lake flies, and like you'd have been talking about the river flies there, we used to get lake flies and they were atrocious, some of them, and to boost, they had really bad hooks. So
yeah, well, that is the biggest thing, I think, that even now the commercial flies, they can still be on dubious hooks, but I think the quality of what's coming out, the dressings, has definitely vastly improved, but you can still get them on dubious bits of lead wire. So
yes, yeah.
But I get to say, so you're right, is that you got that balance right, like the tying of flies was a means to an end, as in winning competitions, you know?
Well, early when I had the time to fish, I suppose is my point. Like when I was younger, like I'd have been on the river maybe 4 or 5 days out of 7, you know, I'd have been there, certainly during the summer I'd have been there most nights. It was within distance that I could have went down on the bike, or I'd have got a lift down to it. And certainly, I think whenever you're practicing or trying to fish for, you know, internationals, etc., like that, there, the practice really does make a difference. You know, that you have to be there. It's the same as course anglers. You know, like they're going out, and if they're practicing all the time, it's an extra one or two fish, but at the end of the day, that makes a difference to them. And I think with certainly the catch and release type competitions, with the numbers that you have to catch, that practice needs to be there. And for me, the time was available when I was younger, but then whenever I got my A levels, etc., and moved on, the time sort of moved away. So I qualified twice to fish for Ireland, and then after that, just whenever I went to university, I didn't have the time, so probably I moved more towards fly tying, and I probably moved a lot away from the trout end of things, and I moved towards concentrating what time I had on fishing for salmon. So it was a total change. I did it and I quit.
And what was the thinking or the reason for moving to the salmon? Was it location?
Well, I suppose I went to college in Dublin. I did take a rod with me and I fished the Dodder a bit when I was down there. But then I didn't ever buy a ticket. I didn't realize that it was a club.
It's a long enough river, you'll be all right.
They're looking for you.
So, but I suppose when I was coming back, you know, I was only got the weekends whenever I was coming back. So, and I was working as well, you know, make money to pay for beer. And essentially when it rained, I went fishing for salmon and trout. I sort of moved away from it a bit, I suppose. I suppose the competition fishing was a draw in itself. You know, it's like a, how would you put it? It's like a fix. And when it's not there, maybe it just didn't drive me as much. And maybe, you know, the salmon, they were like, you know, and salmon do strange things to people, you know, the way they behave around them. So I think you start off when you're fishing for them, and it's almost like a drug. So I caught the salmon bug and I moved to them largely. And then when it was dry, I went out still fishing for trout, but largely salmon then from them.
And then, come here, how did you find then the crossover to starting to tie salmon flies? Was it nice and easy for you, or how were your first attempts?
Well, the first attempt at a salmon fly, I suppose I'd have been, again, looking at like the Veneers guys and stuff, that, and you're sort of looking at these classic flies, and I hadn't read too much about fishing for them, et cetera, and what flies you should use. So I was kind of thinking those were the things that I should be tying, and I didn't have all the materials for them. So I was making these sort of abominations of things. And then we actually went, well, the first salmon I got, I think I was like probably 13 or so. I got that on the Cathedral stretch on a spinner. But then we went to Eastkey, Fortland, and at the time you could fish it relatively cheaply. And we went there for a school trip. And somebody said a band special is the fly to fish. So somebody described to me what a band special was, but really badly. So I can copy what someone tells me, or I can copy a fly. That's something I can do. But if someone gives you the wrong recipe, so I turned up with these band specials, which are no more like a band special, but they caught salmon. Like I caught a fish, and you know, like half an hour after starting, I actually think we got three or something that day. But it was on a fly that's no more like a band special, but it is a fly that subsequently ended up with a place in the box because it was the first, and I did catch more salmon after it.
I was just going to ask you, do you still have the Houston band special?
Yeah. I don't even think it has a name at this stage, but like it had a fluorescent orange rear body made out of floss, you know, instead of being, you know, your black and your yellow seal's fur, and the hackles were grizzle instead of being badger. Like, so it was a completely different fly, but it caught salmon.
Of course, yeah.
So moving over to that, I think it was straightforward enough.
What was it dressed on? Did you dress it on a single, treble. Double, or treble?
No, Esmond Drury trebles, Tetley tea bag makers out of your fingers.
Yeah, so. How did you find that? That's one thing, like, because I'm primarily a trout, always have been trout fly tire. And yeah. Anytime I've tried, I can't hack tying on a treble hook. I just rip the top off my fingers.
Well, a lot of people struggle because you're plinking the thread on the hook points the whole time. So instead of wrapping straight like that, you have to work out this strange. It's not even a figure of eight because there's three hooks. So it's like a weird triple of eight thing. So it's getting. But then that depends on whether you want to get it back. But everybody's style is different. Like I probably tie quite full on the shanks. Like some people tie salmon flies, you may have seen, quite short, and they would actually start the body a hell of a lot further up. But so you tie your fly smaller on a given size hook. So you may be using a size 10 hook, but tying a size 12 fly, which you can do with trout flies, etc. Anyway, then you get the extra gape and you get the extra weight of your hook, and therefore your fly reacts slightly different in the water.
Actually, yeah, but that's probably a good tip for anybody who's starting off on the trebles first. Just to use that, let's say, use a size 10 hook for your size 12s, and just so you get used to it. And then, unlike me, because I packed it in after that, my fingers said to me, no, just
well,
stop.
Isn't it? It's not too bad on, once you get to like size 10s and above, you're all right. 14s are just, like even now, like I'll bleed most nights sometimes, like, you know, because without thinking about it, you turn around or you're using a needle or something like that, and you'll stab yourself with the hook easy enough, so.
So when you turn to salmon, has salmon fishing and salmon fly tying, that's been your bag ever since then, Ryan, hasn't it?
I sort of, how would you put it? I like to be able to tie everything. So if I seen, you know, magazines, they're not what they used to be now. They've taken a massive downturn lately, I suppose. They're disappearing. But like those glossy trout and salmons and trout fishermans or stuff like that there, you know, I always love getting them. I'd look at a fly in it and go, I want to be able to tie that. And it doesn't matter what it is, I would go look at the picture, work out how to do it, buy the materials to do it. So I kind of flipped from one thing to another, but I like to be able to tie absolutely everything. So I'm more probably driven by fly tying now than fishing. So especially since the kids come along, you know, you get less and less time to actually go fishing, but you can go up there at night and you can tie whatever you want. So if I see something new, I'll want to be able to tie it. And unfortunately that costs a fortune in materials. Like, Everybody thinks you get into fly town to make your flies cheaper. If you think that, you're mental, you know. The only way that possibly works is if you actually fish with maybe two patterns and just buy the materials to tie those and tie nothing but them. But if you go anything beyond that, then it's just it's a weird collecting fetish.
Yeah. But if we shows their fly tying bug that you have, that when you look at a fly, like, whereas when I used to pick up the magazines, I would look at a fly and I go, I'll tie that because I want to catch it. Mm-hmm. But you look at a fly, you go, I'll tie that because I want to tie it. Yeah.
So are you doing it then nowadays in terms of the fly tying? It's the challenge for you now, Ryan, is it, to see what you can do?
Yeah, to an extent. Like, I suppose once around about the time that I did the competition fishing, I did enter a couple of mail in fly competitions. And I wanted to do that because I knew I was all right, but I wanted to see how all right I was. So I started entering fly competitions and I started winning them. And that, again, was like a new bug to me, you know, to push you on. And a lot of those, some of them will give you a set pattern, which I find interesting as well, in that you have to produce something, as you know, you might have to tie three of them exactly the same. So that's a challenge in itself, but then they may give you an invention challenge. So you might have to tie three the same and then tie like a tiebreaker fly yourself, which is basically all out, do whatever you can, all singing, all dancing. And that, it's that invention and that push that drove me again for a while. But again, magazines have disappeared. Competitions and stuff have kind of largely disappeared as well. So you have to find something else to motivate yourself to tie. So
I remember those competitions. It was a fly fishing and fly tying.
Yeah, fly fishing and fly tying started.
I remember you won one of those, didn't you?
I won the first one of those that I entered.
Yeah, I remember you winning it. Yeah, I remember that.
And then there was the Irish Open then. I think there was 2 years of it. And then there was Mustad Scandinavian Open that used to run. Does it run again?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you.
It was quite good. It had like 10 categories and you could just enter one or enter all 10 or whatever you wanted. And they sent you a medal if you came for second or third. And they sent you a certificate if you come in the top 10 and a packet of hooks and whatnot. And they all sort of died a death, which I think was a real sort of shame, because it was a motivation, you know, and it got people doing stuff during the winter time, and I wish it was still there.
Yeah, it's a pity.
You do shows as well, don't you, Ryan? Obviously,
yeah,
pandemic there. Hopefully everything's coming back on stream now again. Is the beauty of the shows, I'm fascinated when I go to them, say it was the Galway one you'd go to, and you'd, you know, you walk by the rows of, you know, just see the hugely talented skills on show. And I loved seeing the different styles, like I said, you know, all the different tires and the different styles. For you, for those shows, is it a case of meeting other fly tires from, you know, around Europe, around the world? And then also, do you find that that's a great, in terms of kind of exchanging of ideas, or what do you get out of those shows?
Well, like you say, you know, they're having people there from all over the world. And so I would sort of take a walk around, see what I like. If I see somebody with something that I've never seen before, you can sit down, you can watch them, you can chat to them, learn something new, take it back to yourself. A lot of them will sort of swap a fly with you, you know, so you get to have something in your hand that you can then copy from. So yeah, there's that, there's sort of camaraderie, there's the after show, frivolities, shall we say. But also you get to meet people and you get links, and you know, you might get fishing out of it, or you might get somebody sent, you know, material that you can't get yourself. The other thing about the shows that I like is materials. I collect I have more stuff than I could tie within 20 lifetimes up there. But materials, it's one thing buying something online, but to actually get it in your hand and you can appreciate the quality of it, especially with capes, you know, that you can see the color of it, you can see how it's going to react, you can see the size of it, the stiffness of the stems, etc. I really like that. And the other thing I like is that people are coming to you. Well, some of them want to buy flies off you. Some of them want to learn how to tie stuff. And other ones will go away and they'll come back with a cape from downstairs and they'll bring it up to you and say, you know, what do you think of this one? Is it a good one? You know, should I buy this one? And it's good that the world works in that way in the fly world, you know, that they can do that rather than buying a load of rubbish, essentially, and constricting their ability to tie. So,
and just on that then, I suppose the flip side of it is, take YouTube, for example, mm-hmm. you know, the rise of the, you know, the YouTube channels. It must be brilliant for fly tying in the sense of you can showcase your skills, you can look at other fly tires, what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And likewise kind of communicate that way. You've got your own YouTube channel. Tell us a bit about it and when you started it, and, you know, is it something that you're looking to build on all the time?
Finding the time, I suppose, to do it. When I get into things, I tend to sort of binge on stuff, as my partner tells me. I'm in a fad. So what I'll do is, like, I might put up, you know, 10 videos in a week or something like that there. And then you might not see anything from me for about 3 months. So that's something that I kind of have to work on, is sort of like consistency of getting product up, or not content up, on a regular enough basis so that it keeps people interested. I started it, not that long ago. It was maybe like 4 years or four years or something ago. So part of it was, you know, some people want to buy flies, some people want to tie flies. So it's there in perpetuity for them, you know, that they don't have to come asking the question all the time, because it's not always possible to find the time to answer their question to them. So, like I said, but if you have it there as a video, at least anybody can go in their own time, take what they want from it, and off they go. My thinking behind mine is that it's largely no frills. I probably tie a little bit faster than I tie on the videos, but I do tie very fast in general anyway. So I have to slow it. I have to slow myself down a little bit for them. But I also wanted it. A lot of videos that I've seen, you know, take far, far too long, in my opinion. And, you know, if I'm watching them, I will literally fast forward to the bit that I like to see, and then they can explain it at length. But my videos I do in one take, because I'm not that, as you know from our discussions on trying to get this organized, I'm not a tech wizard. So I try to make them that it's kind of one take, and then I just have to edit on a starting sequence and an end sequence. But it's something also that it's, if I can make that consistent, it's something that people choose whether they like or not, and then they will choose whether to follow you. So I try to just be fairly no frills attached. Some of the videos I do, or maybe if I take one element and maybe go a little bit more into detail on that, but in general, most of my videos would be as short as I could make it to get someone through the entire time. If they want to take it, then they can slow down and watch other bits again if they feel like it. So.
What about for people starting out? Any tips for beginners or people just looking to kind of get into it? Like, is it focus on one fly at the start, you know, one style?
That's something I've been sort of thinking about lately, because some of the questions that I get asked, you'd be surprised at how basic the question actually is. And almost all of our YouTube videos, etc., presume that you have a basic set of skills, you know, and there's a fly here, tie this fly, and then maybe I give you the list of stuff that's in it. But I get people, even at shows, you know, people come up and they want to know how to actually attach the thread to the hook in the first place. They want to know how to, you know, finish the fly off, how to actually dub stuff, you know, put dubbing on a thread. So I've kind of been thinking that at some point I'm going to try and do a really, really basic set of individual broke down videos on something like that, because that is something I think that people are actually wanting. But the problem there is that you have an audience that are used to you doing one thing. And if you do anything, you know, if I tie a trout fly, people will like it, but the people that like salmon flies maybe put a dislike on it, or pike flies or something like that there, because I tie all manner of different stuff. So you can't really please everybody, but it is something that I'm going to do in future, because my advice to people would be that they should pick a fly they're going to tie with, or they're going to actually fish with, something that's going to be of use to them. and just get the stuff to do that, because people are going, what kit should I buy? And I say, don't buy a kit, because most kits are full of superfluous rubbish that, you know, a lot of it is maybe going to be stuff that they couldn't shift. So they've stuck in weird blues and weird pinks and, you know, stuff that's unlikely. You know, whenever you've seen a fly shop back in the day,
black chenille.
Yeah.
Yeah. 5 meters of black chenille.
There you are. Yeah, well, like what are you going to do with that? Like the ace of spades and the black chenille and stuff like that. You know, they caught, well, they're like, how would you put it? Classic rainbow lures now, you know, yeah. Like they went out of fashion a long time ago. It's not to say you can't tie them for your own interest, but you do end up, and fly shops used to end up, they'd buy every color of marabou that a supplier produced. And then they'd end up with, you know, 5 packets of baby blue and stuff like that. Those are the sort of things that I find you find in a fly tying kit. And a lot of stuff that you're never going to use, you know, it's random. So I think just start with something simple. Here's your nymph, simple wet fly, simple dry fly, something that you're going to use, and just get the materials for that. And when you tie it over and over and over again until you're happy with it, and every time you tie it, make it a bit better than the last time. People tend to rush through fly tying, especially with classic flies, you know, the wing is the star. So they rush to get to putting that on, and the rest of it looks like a dog's dinner. But just every time you go, if you're not happy with something, you can always take it off and do that bit again. But once you've got to the end of a fly, you can't go and fix the tail. So every time, do it. When you tie your first fly, keep it, set it aside. It may be good, it may be rubbish, but go back in 3 months, 6 months, tie the same fly, look at the two again, compare it to see where you've come. And every sort of 6 months, if you're good, you'll see the progression in it. So that would be my advice to people, is tie a fly that you're going to fish with, keep it simple, and keep practicing.
I think that's really good advice. I know when I first started getting into fly fishing, I decided I was going to be a fly tier as well. Quickly just encouraged myself that. But I think part of the problem was, though, Ryan, and I think it's, you know, when you get the fly tying kit and you get the book and it's got like 100 flies to tie, yeah, and it's got all these like different methods and you're trying to do everything and you're like, and you can't.
You're running before you can walk.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's overwhelming.
Exactly. Yeah. And and I think it's a very good point, like, is that, and just pick one fly that you're going to fish with. So yeah, if you're, you know, trout angler, salmon angler, you know, just pick, so you'll have an actual interest in it, and just, and I think that's the thing, is, and then find out what are the methods you need just for that. And just, I think I'll go back now.
But again, we didn't have the tools that are available now. We've been talking about social media and YouTube. Yeah. We didn't have that. It is so, so much easier to get into fly tying and to have advice. And if you don't like mine, you can go to someone else. You can go to, you know, especially Americans, you know, some of them like very, very in detail. Some of those videos, you know, on tying a nymph could be 30 minutes long. But it depends what you like. But there's so much tuition available to you. The only difference I would say is now that the sheer volume of materials that's available now is overwhelming. You know, where do you start? Like there's millions of different things, as I said, whereas when we started, we were tying with seal spurs, oval tinsels, capes, natural stuff that would have been shot. There was none of these synthetics, but pick a fly, find a video, find somebody that you like as a tutor online and go with that. And then once you're happy with the techniques that you've learned, then you can add something a little bit to it. But start with something simple. Start with a hare's ear nymph, start with a pheasant tail nymph, something you're going to use actually. Then a simple wet fly, then a winged wet fly, then lock flies with, you know, telephone flies and stuff like that with a million hackles on them and bits and bytes and stuff sticking out of them, you know, it all comes down to that.
And then a fully dressed 19th century salmon fly. Yep, you'll end up there.
That's where you end up.
Yeah, actually, speaking about salmon flies, it was something I wanted to bring up when I knew you were coming on. And we did last spring, we did a podcast on the 1902 Cork fly collection. And I wanted to, and me, when I got on to you, and you said, just hold on. And we can't see it here now, but you're setting about and you're going to replicate and tie every fly in that collection, which I think is brilliant undertaking. I've seen a couple of them It's absolutely amazing what you're doing. How many flies are you going to have to tie for that?
I haven't counted it, but it's roughly, I think it's 390 or something like that. I'm not 100% sure.
Right.
So, but it's an offshoot of a bigger project.
Okay, right.
So there's all of the classic salmon flies. I've started to tie them alphabetically. So I've been at that for a while, but as I said, it's a fad thing. I'll go on a binge and I'll tie. When I tie them, I can tie six or seven in a night, because I have speed to it, and I'm tying them. When you start off tying classic flies, you sort of get obsessed with these big frame jobs that you see, and in reality, those aren't a true representation of what they were. You know, they weren't tied at, you know, 3 inches long or 4 inches long and this size with the bars of color all lined up as such. So in my progression through tying them, I sort of have tried to replicate maybe an older, more fishing style to them. So I started off, there was a couple of books come out, you know, with the list of supposedly all the known ones. Then another book would come out, you know, there's a book come out and it was like 1700 patterns. And I thought, well, that's a lot, but I'll have a go at it. And then another book comes out and another book. And then we've got 3,500 of them that are known now in the, there's a classic fly compendium, which is them all listed alphabetically. And, you know, there might be 10 variations of an Aykroyd, say, you know, by different tires of the day or different houses that were making them commercially. So I started into that, but, you know, it's A, B, C, D. I'm somewhere in the black at the minute, I think I am. But
when you said you had a lot of materials up in the room, you weren't lying, were you?
No.
Wow. So roughly you're going to be in the couple of thousand, are you?
Different materials?
No. In actual numbers of classic flies. I mean,
there's going to be about 3,500 of them. So I'm hoping that I don't have to pass the legacy on to the middle boy. So we'll see.
I understand what you're saying about the framing, because you know they weren't tied like that. They were fishing flies. Sensibly, initially they were fishing flies. They were tied to catch fish.
They were. Yep.
So, but will you frame them? Are you going to put them in a boxes or what? How are you going to store them, basically?
Well, I actually got permission at last to put them on the wall recently. So I started because I had been sort of keeping them in Riker boxes and stuff like that, waiting for until I had enough of them, until someone decided that he likes flies enough to have them on the wall. So I then goes, yeah, we'll concede to put some of them up there. So I produced three frames because I had 300 tied at that stage, which is only a month ago or so. So I put up those, but then all of a sudden the cork collection came out, and whenever I started going through it, I realized that there were so many of them that alphabetically are already behind where I am. So I thought, as a standalone collection, that it probably has more merit as well, you know. So I'm keeping them together and I'm tying them beside it. So I started into them, and I think I've 36 or so of them tied at the minute. So that's 10% of the way. But I started about a month or two ago with them. So, but it looks well on the wall. It's just I don't think she's 100% realized how many frames. So I got those big frames out of IKEA to do them in, because ultimately I'm going to have there's about 100 flies a frame, and if I'm talking about 3,500-4,000 flies, that's, you know, it's 35-40 frames that are 3 foot by 2 foot. So
a lot of wall space needed.
Well, there isn't enough wall space. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to rotate them. So I'll put them up as I tie them, and then they'll sit for a while, and then they'll the next frame will go up and the first one will go back, and I can just take them. I don't really know what's going to happen to them whenever I disappear. Probably someone will say I'll sell them, and they'll get like 50 quid a frame or something like that for them if they're lucky. So,
well, I have to say the 1902 collection, I'd love to see that when that's completed. Like, I think that'd be a lovely thing, you know. You could see it together, like, you know, to be,
yep,
just to see it, like, in the history behind it as well. So we'll keep us posted on that one. Can I ask you, Ryan, in terms of influence or mentors, was there anybody you looked up in terms of fly tying influence?
As I said, I was taught to put the basic, you know, I'd, 1 night tuition when I'd have been, what was I, eight or nine or something like that. There was basically just, this is how you put stuff on. And then from that, it was just experiment yourself. Yeah. So no, there wasn't anything. And
I'll harken back again, Dara, there. I'll harken back to Ryan and myself in the same vintage. But like when we started fly tying, the only thing I remember hearing about particular fly tires was Rogan's. You know, I'd heard of Rogan's, but I wouldn't have heard of many, you know, there was no big stars in the fly tying world. There might've been, like here, there would've been people I would've known locally that were good fly tires, but it's not like now. It's, and I think it's social media that is probably
definitely
the fly tires out there.
Yeah.
But can I ask you then, does that mean that like nowadays when there's so much sharing of information, which is good on one hand, that it becomes quite homogenized, you know, because like if you're growing up, Ryan, you know, you're growing up your own style because you're not being influenced by what you've seen or read. And likewise, Tom, where you've grown up, you're not being influenced by outside. So you're kind of bringing more imagination and creativity and originality to the table. Mm. Whereas now I wonder, like, yes, it's good you're sharing information, but maybe there's less of that happening. I don't know.
I think it's just so wide of a field now that you can choose to go as niche as you possibly feel like. So there are still people, you know, like I said, I still see something all the time and go, geez, never seen that before. And you can head down that route if you want. You know, you guy might have 10 followers and tie something quite bizarre, but it's still, you know, there's still, I don't think it'll all become the same. No, I think people still choose a line or a route to go down themselves, whereas some of us like to tie everything. But most people will tell us a finer sort of a niche.
What I'm saying, like we've fly tying classes here, and even with for the adults that do it, even though like we'll sit down, I'll tie a reference pattern first of what we're doing, and everybody will tie it. And even then, they've all seen the way to be tied, and occasionally I'll show a video, YouTube video of it being tied. All the patterns will be slightly different. And even, you know, because everybody has their own style. And to this day now, guys I fish with, and this is just trout flies, I'll look at it and I can nearly tell if it's somebody I fish with a lot and I use their flies. Oh, that's like, I know Mike Shanks' pattern, you know, because they have their own style of tying. Paul Giras that comes here, he has his own style of, I'd know the head on a Paul Giras fly straight away, you know?
Yeah. And would you fish with someone else's fly?
If it catches fish, I'll fish with it.
Yeah.
That's the way.
You'll
only fish with your own, will you?
It's very, I would say in my life, very, very, very rare that I've ever tied on. Like I can appreciate someone else's, but there's just something about it. It's maybe the connection to it or something, but no, I find it very difficult to do that. I'll generally fish something I've tied myself. I may keep it in the box and copy it, but then whenever I've tied it, I'm happy. You know, I don't know what it is. There's something there in my head with that one. You know, I will almost only fish with something I've tied myself.
What's your favorite fly to tie?
Favorite fly to tie? Probably a classic fly. I like tying a fly called the Flood Tide. You know, whenever I look at classic flies, I don't look at most of them. I don't see their connection to catching a fish with them. They seem sterile, you know, it's hard to see, but I think they just had so many fish then, you know, that it was maybe easier. I have fished with classic flies. I have caught salmon on classic flies, but I'd be very selective in the ones that I would choose to fish with. And I'd choose ones that had more motion in them. You know, maybe they have like a marabou or a spey type hackle or something like that. And the rigid sort of ones, I find it harder to relate to. But a Flood Tide is definitely one of my favorite. I like tying Wilkinson shrimps, which you might have seen for, you know, a modern shrimp fly. I've never caught a fish on one ever, but I really like the color combination. I really like tying them. But the way I work with salmon is that you catch fish salmon lay in lays. You catch them in the same spot, though. You know that you're covering a taking place. So, and in that you probably don't get that huge amount of time at them, and you want to be able to catch one. So you'll fish something that you know will work. So if I have confidence in a fly, I'll fish it.
Yeah.
What I tend to do is I almost always fish two flies. And if I catch a fish, then I'll maybe put on a fly I haven't caught a fish on before on the dropper or something like that. And if I catch a fish in that, then I'll have confidence in it for a gain. But I will leave flies that I'm confident in on all day and chop and change something that I'm not so confident in until it's, because I've never caught a fish on, like, I've never caught a fish on that. I've never caught a fish on a cascade, but then I refuse to fish cascades because everyone fishes them. Wilkinson is something that I have to catch a fish on. I'm intent on catching one. Purple flies was another thing that, you know, people fish a lot, but I'd never caught a fish on. So I just set myself the target a couple of years ago that I was going to catch a fish on purple flies, and I fished and fished at them, and then I became confident in them because I was catching them. So those are two certainly that I do like to tie, but I hooked a fish on a flood tide, but otherwise I've never caught a fish on either of the two of them. So it's just I like them. They're striking looking.
Tell me this, Ryan, something I wanted to ask you, and going back to the old flies.
Yeah.
I was looking at the dressings there on some of them, and I just want to ask you, like, you know, some of them like toucan and red ibis, like a lot of the feathers and materials that were used, like they're protected species now.
Some of them aren't. So some of them are not necessarily protected, but just you can't go into areas where the FARC guerrillas control in Colombia and just run around with an air rifle, you know, so they can't get them out. Or maybe they're not protected, but they may have bans on exporting them, etc.
Right.
So yes, the price of them has gone ridiculous. Some of those things you're talking about, like those tiny little feathers, are 10 and 15 pounds of feather, and you're putting them into a fly that requires 2, 3, 4 of them, you know, you can run into fairly hefty cost to actually tie a fly.
Is there any material that is not available?
Not available.
Yeah. Is there anyone that you couldn't get anymore, if, let's say, from the flies from the 19th century? Like you said,
not particularly. There's one really weird material, which is like the beard of a clam or something like that. And I forget what it's even called, but there's one random obscure fly that uses this, like, it's like sea beard or something it's called, which is like some, you know, the way a mussel sticks onto rocks with like wee fairy things. There's some sort of a thing like that from some weird mollusk that I think is probably the rarest of them. Or gold beater skin, I think, is another one that's a little bit rare. But in general, most of the things can be got. It's just they're using old taxidermy mounts or something like that, you know, searching for those, or old collections that come up for sale. You can take a fly apart and reuse the materials out of it. But collecting materials is as much a drug.
It's a whole other rabbit hole.
As anything like so. And there are, listen, there are, you can use substitutes. I make substitutes for Indian crow myself. I've developed techniques for making them, and you can use different things for your chatterers, etc. And the Cory bustard, you know, you probably heard that, you know, bustards are, well, protected anyway. But some of the, I think the San Diego Zoo started a program whereby they would collect all the feathers that fell out of the ones they were breeding, and they gave them to the classic fly community over there, and they distributed them. Because if you remove the price of them, then there's no
demand
pressure on someone to go and shoot the things.
Yeah.
So they did that, which I thought was very good. And it'd be good if zoos would get into that over here as well, you know, or that they could maybe ask for a donation or something like that there. But ultimately, if the feathers were given away for free, it would reduce the pressure on the wild.
Yeah, great idea.
Ryan, final question. It's been fascinating chatting to you. And, you know, really hearing about, I suppose, the kind of initial parallel between your fly fishing career and the fly tying, and now it's come around to fly tying.
Fly tying, yeah.
Mainly like...
maybe when I retire.
Yeah, when the kids have left. But tell me this, most memorable fish caught in the fly, what is it?
Oh, I had to think about that, and there was a few came to mind. Like, there was there's a salmon I caught in the River Tempo, which is a tribute to the Erne, and I caught it by mistake, but there hadn't been one seen essentially since the dam went up. Pally Shannon, it was just random. I caught it on a trout streamer, and then the first one that my son landed, I hooked and handed to him. But the one that is probably most memorable is my dad got me into fishing when I was young, but he died when I was young as well. And I was left with his rods. And I know that he hooked a couple of salmon fishing Loch Melvin, and I think one on Loch Conn, and lost both of them. Remember back then, whenever they were fishing with lock rods, they were 11, I think it's 11 foot three for like a 7 weight, but it literally you can bend it right round till the butt touches the tip. And so I got that refurbished. There's a guy here in the town I live in, McGuire's Bridge, Packy Trotter, and I brought it to him. He stripped it down, re-varnished it, put the eyes and all on, tidied up the cork, and I got my son tied me a fly, and I went up on the derg, and I caught a salmon on his rod. And that one stands out for me. I actually made a YouTube video of it at the time, sort of to remind me of it. But it was really an emotional fish for me. I understand why he lost his salmon after it, because like it's not built for playing fish at all. You know, my wrist was wrecked by the time I got it in. It wasn't a big fish, it wasn't a clean fish, but it was caught on his rod and a fly my son tied. So it was that's it.
Beautiful. And the importance of generations when it comes to fly fishing as well, isn't it? Like handed down to the generations as well. Ryan, before we let you go, what's the YouTube channel, the handle for if people want to check out your fly tying videos?
That's just my name. If you look for my name and fly tying, it should come up.
Brilliant. And there's lots of great videos there for people to watch and learn from.
I'm not sure how many is there at the moment. There might be 500 or 600 on it at this stage. So it sort of just grows, ticks itself over. At some point, I'm hoping it sort of hits a critical mass and produces, you know, like 100,000 followers, and I can quit work. But it's just taking over. So I think we're at about 7,500.
Well, listen, we'll definitely recommend it as a channel and as a resource for people that want to learn some more from it. Ryan Houston, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Our thanks to Ryan Houston for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on irelandonthefly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.